Greetings, and welcome to Bear Soup. This is your host, Ron Suresha. Ahead in this 91st episode of Bear Soup, which is brought to you by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books, an excerpt from Jeff Mann's latest book, Fog, a novel of desire and reprisal. It's news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online or sign community. You're just in time for another heaping helping of Bear Soup. I'm pleased to bring you the first part of the new book by author Jeff Mann, entitled Fog, a novel of desire and reprisal. The description reads, outside an isolated cabin, winter fog caresses spruce trees. Inside, two men, lovers, have enacted a plan of revenge, kidnapping the handsome son of the man who wronged one of them. Al, the accomplice, has stalked Rob for weeks, and his infatuation for the young man has grown deeper than he ever anticipated. So much so that he finds himself drawn to protect Rob from the anger and resentment burning away his partner Jeff's insides. With each day caring for their bound and gagged captive, Al finds the power over Rob not solely an aphrodisiac, potent, irresistible, and soon mutual, but the passion of his heart stoked. But Jeff has no intention of ever allowing the young man to escape. And so, we have the first part of Jeff Mann's novel, Fog. Chapter 1. January is the month of mists. The cove's full of white this morning, making fuzzy shapes of the spruce trees surrounding the house. If I didn't know better, I'd say that someone had plastered the window panes with translucent paper, that we were moored inside a pearl. The glass of the pane is frigid beneath my touch. Winter is dedicated to invasions, insisting on its right to enter whom it will. The fog's pallor continues inside. The pale body on the bed is silent yet, and still, as if carved from cloudy quartz. The only movement this sleeping sculpture makes is the almost imperceptible rise and fall of breath. White, white, wrapped here and there in strips of silver gray. He's been out for many hours, a chemically induced unconsciousness that's held over 2 days in several state lines. My fingers still chilled by the window pane, I bend down and caress his bare belly. Smooth, solid, warm. Skin satiny with youth. I drop to my knees by the bed, kiss the forehead, and suck gently on his hard little nipples. Rob, I whisper. Rob Drake. No response. I sigh, rise, and settle into a rocking chair to wait. The air is very cold. I'm thankful for my rag-wool sweater, the heat of the coffee cup in my hand. Soon my partner Jay will be home for lunch. Soon Rob will wake. Until then, I want simply to sit here in the silent, fog-swept house and watch our captive sleep. Jay drops the Sonic bag on the kitchen table and unpeels his army jacket. His real name's Jeff, but I've learned to call him Jay. Jay and Al. We've been coaching ourselves for a year now, ever since this plan began in earnest, to call one another by pseudonyms. We don't want to give Rob any auditory evidence in case we decide one day to let him loose, which is a big if. A pit in the forest floor is a more preferable denouement, as far as Jay is concerned. Drake still out? Asks Jay. I nod, dumping out the bag's contents. 5 containers of tater tots, 5 footlongs. That extra's for him. Feed him when he comes, too. I nod again. I do love nodding around Jay. Have ever since we met in that DC bear bar. Something about his brawny frame, intense eyes, bushy black eyebrows, and deep voice always seems to make him convincing and make me obedient. From ex-con's drinking buddy to ex-con's lover, to ex-con's accomplice in a kidnapping. Not the smartest series of moves I've made. Nevertheless, here I am, sharing a house with not one but 2 men I feel passionately about. Jay and I sit in silence for a good while, chewing on our dogs before I say, you know, it really is chilly in here, and I... Jay interrupts. He does that a lot, as if trying to spare me from articulating yet another stupid thought. I wanted Chili. I want him to suffer. If you're cold, put on another layer. I want that little shit shaking and whining. No blankets. Don't coddle him, Al. He isn't a guest. He's a captive. You know what his father did. Just 'cause you think he's pretty. Okay, I think he's pretty, too. But he isn't your sweet boy. He's my tool. Okay? Yes, Jay. I sigh. I need to toughen myself, I know. Jay has reminded me time and time again that Rob deserves what he gets. Sins of the father and all that. That's when the noise begins upstairs, behind the thick door of the back bedroom, the ragged cries that Jay's handiwork has so effectively muffled. Jay grins and takes another bite of his second dog. Sounds like our boy's up. When I rise, Jay grabs my forearm. Sit down and finish your lunch. Let him roll around a little and wonder where the hell he is. No one can hear him out here. As usual, I obey. I sit down and dip a tater tot in ketchup. The noises continue. Shouts for help, dammed up by rubber and tape. We move to the living room to share one of Jay's hand-rolled cigarettes. Right, Al. Sure is cold in here, Jay says. Maybe tonight we'll start us up a fire. He pulls an afghan over our laps and leans back into the couch's plump pillows. The noises continue, dull thump of a body hitting the floor, bare heels drumming hardwood. Jay puffs out a series of smoke rings and smiles. Mists swirl like curdled silence beneath the spruce. The noises pause, then continue. Hapless pounding, stifled cries, glass shattering. Don't have to be worked till 2 today, says Jay, snuffing the cigarette. Stretching out on the couch, his head nestled in my lap, he slips into a nap. I stroke his worn, stubbly, beloved face and listen to Rob's fear. Distant, muted, sharp edges wrapped in gauze. Chapter 2. Masks, just in case Rob ever manages to dislodge his blindfold. Black spandex with eye and mouth holes. We look pretty frightening in them, and as Jay likes to point out, fright is what this foray into abduction is all about. Our prisoners yelled and thrashed on and off through Jay's lengthy nap, but the silence prevailing now behind the padlocked back bedroom door indicates that he's worn himself out. Jay unlocks the door and eases it open. Rob's no longer on the bare mattress where we left him. He's lying on the floor on his side, blindfolded and gagged, bound hand and foot, back against the far wall. His chest's heaving, his head's raised and cocked toward the sound of our entrance. Signs of his struggles scatter the room. Must throw rugs, a tipped over chair, a shattered lamp.
Here's our boy, Jay says sweetly. Active little shit, aren't ya? Broke a lamp, too.
He rights the furniture, then strides over and, without a word of warning, kicks Rob in the gut with his steel-toed work boot. Rob gasps, rolls away, and curses.
Shut up, boy,
Jay snarls, kicking him a second time. Rob curls into a ball like a sow bug, groaning.
Jay, don't, I begin, but as usual, Jay cuts in, this time with, I'll treat him any goddamn way I want.
He presses his boot sole into the side of Rob's face, then growls,
Get over here and get this little fucker back on the bed.
As soon as we touch Rob, he starts thrashing. He's 6 foot tall and pretty much all muscle, so he's a load, but Jay and I are both bigger and broader, and soon enough, despite our prisoner's vigorous struggles, we've dumped him onto the bed on his back. He's screaming again, but the sound doesn't seem to please Jay any longer. Rob's disobeying an express order to shut up, and Jay gets very angry when folks don't do what they're told. Pulling out his army dagger, Jay straddles Rob's chest and holds the blade to the straining cords of his throat.
Okay, kid, that's enough, Jay hisses through gritted teeth. I've had enough of your noise now. Fun's over. Shut up and keep still, or I'll cut you bad. I've gotten this blade mighty sharp just for you.
Rob's young, 22, but he's not stupid. Suddenly, he's as unmoving as he was while unconscious. Once again, that fog-pale statue.
Good boy, Jay grunts, patting Rob's cheek with the flat of the blade, then climbing off him. Watch him, Al. I'll be right back. Gotta fetch something from the basement.
I wait till I can no longer hear the tromp of Jay's boot soles before I touch Rob. When I grasp his shoulder, he jumps with fright. I'm not gonna hurt you, I say softly. I'm gonna roll you over onto your side so your hands won't go numb, okay? Rob lies there panting. He's obviously suspicious of my concern after the brutal treatment he just got, but then he nods, and I ease him over. He doesn't resist as I squeeze his fingers to check his circulation. They're warm, not cold. Pink, not purplish. All good signs. Jay's an expert. I'll bet you're hungry, right? Rob nods. I'll feed you once he leaves. You need to use the bathroom, I suspect. Another wordless affirmative, this one more urgent. Okay, once he leaves. There's a heavy tread on the stairs and the clinking of metal. Jay appears in the door, grim-faced, with an armful of chain. Chapter 3. Afternoon rains replaced the morning fog, the winds brisk, blowing sheets of wet against the glass. We thought about boarding up the windows in this room, but Jay decided that we were too far up the cove for anyone to hear anything as long as we kept Rob gagged. I sit in my chair, masked in black, rocking, sipping more coffee, studying our prisoner's pale body. Jay's ordered me to watch him, and that's a job I'm more than willing to take. I need to feed him in a minute, but first I want to take his youth and loveliness in, this boy I've come to care for despite my better judgment. Rob lies where Jay left him, on the broad bed. His hands are duct-taped behind his back. Several lengths of tape are wrapped around his bare torso and upper arms. Another strip of tape secures his elbows together. More tape binds his ankles. The big rubber ball filling his mouth is held in place with another few feet of tape we've wrapped around his head. To make sure he never sees our faces, there's a good bit of tape plastered over his eyes. The latest addition to these safeguards is the short, heavy chain Jay just padlocked around both Rob's neck and the headboard to ensure that he doesn't range off the bed and rearrange the furniture again. In other words, our captive's going nowhere. Jay's seen to that. He has no intention of seeing his revenge short-circuited after waiting so long for it. The strips of silver-gray tape are wrapped around a physique of remarkable beauty. Rob's nearly naked. He's got nothing on but white briefs, his sweatshirt, running shorts, and tennis shoes, having been removed once we had him drugged in the back of the van. This exposure serves several functions. He suffers from the cold. His sense of vulnerability and humiliation is intensified. Best of all, we can see the fine lines of his body, an athletic build shaped by years of gymnastics, as well as weightlifting and jogging the boy's been dedicated to lately in preparation for the police academy. I know all this about him and more, having spied on Rob for a long while now in preparation for his abduction. His shoulders are very broad, his hips narrow and lean, his chest's hard and curved like a Roman breastplate, and smooth save for the brown hairs rimming his small, cold, stiff nipples. The upper arms taped to his torso are lined with well-defined muscles that bulge and relax as he flexes them, silently and futilely, against the tape. His belly is flat, ridged, and hairless. A light line of fur begins below his navel and disappears into his underwear. His legs are as muscular as his torso, but in contrast to his upper body, very, very hairy. Right now he's lying on his side facing me, but I know, having cut clothes off him,
having studied his bound and sleeping form over the hundreds of miles we've driven, having helped Jay lug him up here to this cold room in this remote cove, that the forearms bound behind his back are coated with golden brown hair, his buttocks are firm, white, smooth, and dimpled with regular athletic exertion. The cleft between is fuzzy with brown fur, and there is an extensive tattoo on his back, deep black, dramatic against his skin's white, a ladder of tribal spikes and swirls that begins at his waist, climbs his spine, and covers his upper back like black fire, flickering over his hard lats and curling to an end over his shoulders in the nape of his neck. His face? Well, that's pretty much concealed by the tape that gags and blindfolds him, but I know his handsome features regardless. I've come to dote on his friendly, trusting blue eyes, his long, straight nose, his thin lips occasionally pursed with thought but more often smiling, his chin occasionally shaved smooth but more often stubbly with a goatee that never quite gets there before he shaves it off again. Right now his chin and jaw are covered with a 2-day growth of beard. We took him on Tuesday and today's Thursday, and I rub the roughness of it now before unlocking the chain around his neck, sitting him up on the edge of the bed and peeling the tape off his mouth. The ball is very big, and so his jaw must be very sore. He can't spit it out by himself, though he tries. I curve a finger into the side of his mouth and around the ball, then gently dislodge it. Rob gasps, and a little pool of built-up saliva dribbles over his lips and onto his chin. He works his jaw around, and I massage his face till he begins to speak. A voice I recognize from my careful stalkings. I've sat near him in restaurants and coffee shops for months now, listening to his conversations, both face-to-face and via cell phone. It's youthful and deep, but the usual jovial, macho, hearty tone, boy doing his best to be a man, has been entirely banished by his situation. Now his voice is trembling, a wet quiver. The change both disturbs and delights me. It's thrilling and saddening to see manliness so shaken, so broken down. "Where am I? Why are you doing this to me?" Rob says, licking his lips. Stupidly, abruptly, he tries to stand, but his ankles are tied tightly together and he almost falls. Wrapping an arm around his shoulders, I force him back down onto the bed. "Careful, or you'll hurt yourself. If you promise to behave, I'll tell you what's up," I say, trying to sound as determined and ruthless as Jay actually is. What I've got to fight back right now is the strong urge to take this scared boy in my arms and comfort him. "I took the gag out to feed you lunch, but you start making noise, the ball gets taped back in, all right?" Rob nods. I hold him against me, steadying him, goose-pimpled alabaster, Michelangelo's David wrapped in the tight anachronism of duct tape. He's shaking violently. I reach up and ruffle his short brown buzz cut as if I were his gymnastics coach encouraging him back onto the rings. What can I tell him? Nothing solid, for any of those facts would reveal our identities and motives and thus doom him. Ignorant, he has a good chance, after we use him, of being found by authorities in a roadside ditch, bound, gagged, but still alive. Aware of Jay's reasons for revenge, he's guaranteed a shallow grave. So I lie, hoping that I sound convincing. "Look, kid, you know how a kidnapping works. We've contacted your father and asked for a ransom. While we wait for that to be delivered, we're going to hold you here. Sorry if you're uncomfortable. We'll need to keep you bound and gagged till you're freed. It's a necessary precaution. The ransom should come through in a couple days, a week at the most. As long as you keep quiet, don't fight us, and do what you're told, I promise you that you won't get hurt. Once the money shows, we'll take you home. If you do fight us, well, my partner is pretty vicious, so I suspect you'll end up damaged or worse. Understand?" "Yeah, okay," Rob nods feebly. His quivering lips firm up. "I won't give you any trouble," he mutters, his shaky voice growing steadier. "I'll do whatever you say. Just don't hurt me, okay, dude?" "Dude? Very cute. I forget how young you are," I say, retrieving the sonic bag from the bedside table. He's taking it all pretty well, considering the traumatic circumstances. No surprise, really. The boy's a small-town athlete, working on a degree in criminal investigations, hoping to follow in his father's law enforcement footsteps, all of which means that he's deeply invested in traditional American concepts of manhood, and that means being brave, strong, and stoic in the face of danger. He takes what answers I give without pleading for more information. His trembling subsides. He chomps on the hot dog and tater tots I hold to his mouth, gulps two glasses of water, and thanks me. When I cut his feet loose and walk him to the bathroom, he thanks me again. He doesn't protest when I pull his briefs down. Small, fright-limp penis in a fluff of brown hair, muscles of his lean loins shaped like Apollo's leer. And when I gently push him onto the toilet seat to do some long-delayed business, he doesn't even complain when I wipe his ass, though a deep red flush spreads over his pale features. I suspect this admirable stoicism is about to break down, however. Now that I have Rob bare-assed in the bathroom, it's time to explain what I must do next, what Jay's ordered me to do, and I dread the boy's reaction. Okay, son. You need to bend over. I've got to clean you out. What I'm holding in my hand, what my hostage can't see, is called an anal spike, a rubber sphere soon to be filled with warm water that I'll squirt up Rob's ass so as to ready him for a good plowing. I've used it for years to prepare myself for Jay's enthusiastic cock thrusts. Now it's Rob's turn.
What? Clean me out?
What did you mean? Your ass, kid. This won't hurt. It's just water. I'm just going to squirt it up inside you.
But why?
The quiver returned to Rob's voice. Jay told me to, for later tonight. Once he gets home, he's going to... As often as I've fantasized about it, I can't bring myself to say it.
What? What's he going to do tonight?
What? Oh no. That's when Rob starts begging, when he realizes that his body is not only going to be kept immobile, but also used.
Please, oh man, please, no. Don't let him do that.
His pleas break my heart and stiffen my dick. Panicked, he starts to struggle, staggering blindly against me, fighting my grip.
Help! Help! Somebody! Shouts. Jesus, somebody help me!
Shut up, you stupid boy. There's no one around to hear you. Just shut up.
Don't let him. God, please help.
Shut up, I snarl. Seizing a moist washcloth from the shower stall, I ball it up and force it into Rob's mouth. The din continues nonetheless, albeit muffled now. The boy shouts, thrashing about in my grasp.
Kid, stop it!
Gripping his throat, I slam him against the wall and clamp a hand over his mouth.
Stop fighting and shut up! I'll fetch Jay's knife if you don't stop. You hear me? You hear me? Shut up, I hiss, or I swear I'll carve you up.
The threat works. Rob abruptly stops his noisy struggle.
You gonna obey me now?
Rob whimpers, nods, and sags against me. That's a good boy. Keep that rag in your mouth. Try to relax and just take this. I growl. It won't hurt. It's just a little plastic tube and some warm water. Shoving him onto his knees, I bend him over till his face is pressed against the floor and his ass is angled up. I fill the sphere, lube up the plastic tip, spread his buttocks, and, as gently as possible, slide the thin tube up Rob's asshole. He winces and shakes his head. His pleading soaks the wash rag, an amalgam of humiliation and desperation I do my best to ignore. Three times I squirt him full, order him to hold it in, sit him on the toilet, order him to release, before finally cleaning him up with another wash rag, lifting him to his feet, and pulling his briefs back on. I'm about to lead him back to the bedroom when I see the streaks gleaming on his pallid cheeks. Tears are trickling from beneath his tape blindfold. When I pull the wash rag out of his mouth, he starts to sob.
Kid,
I groan, gripping his shoulder, steadying his blindness, what little anger left in me fading fast. Having something pushed up his ass has made what's to come tonight far too real.
Please don't. Rob bawls. Jesus, man, I have a girlfriend. Don't rape me. Don't let him rape me. Please.
Pity feels like a jagged rock caught in my windpipe. I can't help but hug him. I wrap my arms around him and let him sob. Standing there in the bright light of the bathroom, anal spike in the sink, lube on the back of the toilet, the nigh-nude young man I've helped kidnap presses against me, weeping wildly. His face nestles against my shoulder, wetting the wool with his frightened boy's tears. He's still crying as I lead him back to the bedroom, tape his ankles together, and help him onto the mattress. He rolls into a fetal position, sides shaking.
Kid, stop, please.
Now it's my turn to beg. I stroke his shoulder, pat his head awkwardly, say stupid things like, Jay's determined to do this. I can't tell you why. I can't stop him. And I'll be here tonight. I'll try to get him to go slow, so it doesn't hurt too bad. If only Jay weren't so strong. If only I weren't so weak. If only Rob's father hadn't answered that APB so long ago. The boy's so handsome and pitiable with tape over his eyes, tears sliding down his stubbled cheeks. My attempts at being ruthless haven't worked too well, and now I give entirely into the tender ache his beauty and helplessness ignite in me. I climb onto the bed, wrap an arm around Rob's waist, snuggle up against him, his heaving back against my chest, and hold him until his tears are done. As soon as Rob stops crying, he starts to shiver, a full body quake, the fear I can't do much about. The cold I can, despite what I promised Jay. What he doesn't know won't hurt anyone. I rise, cross the room, open the closet, and soon enough I'm soothing Rob beneath a flannel sheet and a heavy comforter, our heads resting on the same pillow. Better? I ask, hugging him close, warming him up, and Rob whispers, Yes. I wipe the wet off his cheeks, and Rob whispers, Thanks, dude. He curls, uncomplaining, against my chest, acquiescent, accepting my affection, thankful, I suppose, for any kindness he can get. I'm going to have to gag you again before he comes home, and I'm going to have to put these blankets away. Understand? Rob nods. Don't tell him I let you get warm, all right?
I get it, Rob says.
He's still shivering, so I pull him closer. He feels very, very sweet. Holding him feels like honey tastes. Our bodies fit together as nicely as I've always thought they would, ever since I started following him on Jay's instructions. I'd love to fondle his nipples and cock right now, but that might frighten him, so I refrain. Now that I'm holding him this close, I want inside him as badly as Jay does. I only hope he can't feel my hard-on beneath my pants. I'll do my best tonight, but you've got to face facts. Jay's going to do with you what he wants with you, and neither of us can do anything about it. He's my partner. He's older, stronger, wiser. I owe him a lot. I do what he says. He's been planning your abduction for a long time. Rob swallows hard, but says nothing. Try not to cry tonight. Weakness only makes him meaner. Just lie still as best you can and try to keep quiet. Rob nods. We lie there together listening to rain drip off the eaves and patter the windows. Exhausted from terror and struggle, knowing instinctively that he's safe with me, Rob falls asleep in my arms. I stroke his face, kiss his tattooed shoulders, the fine hairs on the nape of his neck. He's young enough to be my son. I watch the clock on the wall. 2 hours pass. Afternoon's gray light dwindles. Half an hour before Jay's due home, I wake Rob, push the ball back into his mouth, tape it in, chain his neck to the bed frame, and return the bedclothes and pillow to the closet. I head downstairs to wait for Jay, leaving Rob alone to quake in the cold and the dark. And this has been the first part of Jeff Mann's new novel, Fog. You've been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 91.
Thanks, as usual, to the Merman, Joe of BearRadio.net, and, as always, to my husband, Rocco. And thanks to you for listening to the Bear Soup Podcast. You can email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Check out the Bear Soup page on our home blog, www.bearsouppodcast.net. Bear Soup is produced for the Bear Radio Network, which is not responsible for the content of this podcast. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by Bear authors at BearBonesBooks.com, spelled BearBonesBooks. Look for Bear Soup, Bear Radio, and Bear Bones Books, also on Facebook. And remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.